Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
All ministers and officials should now go to Case Orange. Repeat, this is an official colonial government broadcast.
Hey, and welcome to another episode of the Battlestar Galacticast. I am Mark Bernardin.
And I am Trisha Helfer.
How are you, Trisha?
I am doing fantastic.
Are you? That is so good to hear.
You were sick last time.
Last time I had what turned out to have been bronchitis. Ooh. Which I discovered while flying to the East Coast, which is exactly when you want to discover mm-hmm. you have bronchitis. And now, so I'm pretty much recovered from the bronchitis, but now I have like dumbass dental pain. It turns out that like 48 is a really good year for me.
You know, I found out today right before I came here that I need to get glasses for night driving. So
welcome to the old
45 is, and I didn't realize it until I went to the boondocks of Canada and was renting a car and driving and, you know, on the freeway, the main freeway, north and south in Alberta. And I mean, it's like, there's no lights.
See, it's not like you need glasses to drive in Los Angeles. You just need glasses to drive when you're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, because then when there was a road sign, I couldn't see it until I was upon it.
What are we doing? Where are we going?
You know, but that, it's sort of like if a deer pops out at you or whatever. So I'm safety first.
Good for you.
Not
good
always, but I should be.
But you're a very responsible road citizen.
Yes.
Yes, because you're a driver of many things, and some of those things go very fast, and so I feel like you're a safety girl.
I am a safety girl. Yes, when you drive a motorbike, you realize that road safety is quite important. So,
indeed.
So now I'm kidding. Now I have a prescription for night glasses.
I think you should get like some
night glasses. Is that what they're called?
Night glasses. We're calling them now. That's what they're going to be forever at this point. Night glasses.
Night glasses.
Tuesday nights at 8 on NBC. Night glasses. Dung dung. But I think you should get like the giant 70s ones, like these huge, like.
I totally want to.
These massive specs.
Katie has a pair, actually.
Oh, that's awesome.
I mean, Katie wears glasses sometimes. I don't know if she needs them or not, but she wears them. And she has she got this super big pair.
That's amazing.
And they're,
like they're like Twiggy would wear as a, like some fab 60s, 70s retro glasses. Mm-hmm. I look forward to seeing. Like, who's that coming down the pike? Oh, that's Trisha. How can you tell? I can see those glasses from 1,000 yards out.
It's either that or the cat eye.
That'd be amazing. Like Catwoman.
Well, we digressed before we even started, didn't we?
Boy, we just like went. We weren't even like on a path or a plan. We're just like, let's go.
We didn't even thank sci-fi or Bear McCreary.
Nope. You people don't get thanked this time. Because we're talking about age.
Getting fracking old.
Yep, as we barrel towards senior citizenship. But anyway, it is good to be back.
It is.
Welcome to the new year. Because while you listen to this in March, it is for us the first time since the holidays that we've gotten together.
Yes.
Yes. But no, we are here today to talk about Torn, which was written by Anne Coffel Saunders and directed by a name I haven't seen before.
I noticed that as well.
Jean de Signesnac. That's probably, I screwed up his last name somehow, because that's a lot of... It's like it's almost Bergerac, but no, and then it's almost Signesnac.
Yeah.
He's a snack. Jean de Snack.
Jean de Snack.
Yeah, you are, Jean.
Who had the challenge of being on the base ship for quite a bit.
Yeah, there's a lot of time we spend on a base ship. But previously on the Battlestar Galacticast.
Collaborators.
Collaborators. Who gets justice for the crimes of collaboration? Ty does, and who turns out to have been the secret hero of the New Caprican Resistance?
Gata.
Yay! Turns out vigilante justice has its limits and has its problems, as we discovered last episode. But today, we're still talking about that a little bit.
We are. It infiltrates, or the feeling of it, it like permeates. Is that the right word?
It is right.
Permeates throughout the entire crew.
It does. It does. It's these are two households who have not found a way to become one family again. But we'll get in there. We'll get to it.
We'll get to it. Oh, I need to press play. I'm pressing play. Oops. Yeah. I've got voice. Oops.
First
Oops.
Time.
Oops. I'm a little rusty.
Listen, it's
I need some
WD-40. It's been a whole year since we did this.
I almost said W9. That's a whole different thing.
That's a whole tax thing that you don't want to talk about. So this opens with a scene when we were just queuing it all up. Trish is like, ugh.
My stomach was flatter, I just noticed. Back in 2006, whatever this was.
Why do you in a red bikini on a beach on a rock cause you to go, ugh?
The reason it does is I hate the ADR in it.
Oh, okay.
And I remember watching it and having a like such a strong reaction because, of course, we're out on a beach in, I was about to say Mexico, Vancouver. And it's probably cold. I mean, it's probably not cold, super cold, but...
And one of you gets to wear long sleeves.
And one gets to wear pants and long sleeves and... but you're by a beach and it was windy and so I remember they couldn't use any of the dialogue. I think it's visually shot beautiful. Our faces are obliterated. Mm-hmm. I think it's, you can't see our mouth. Like, I think it's actually interesting in that aspect.
Right.
But, to me, the ADR is too loud. Like, I don't like when you can tell it's ADR. Mm. I would rather have heard hear a little bit more of the beach sound.
Right. They didn't get a lot of room tone.
Not a lot of room tone. There's a bit, but I remember seeing it for the first time way back then and being horrified. I wasn't as horrified now.
Gotcha. Room tone, for you boys and girls at home who don't know what that means, is when you're shooting on a set, the sound engineer will always say, okay, everybody quiet. I just want to get some room tone, which allows them to capture the sound of the space. So when they're editing and when they're putting in new dialogue for ADR, whatever that is, they have the sound of the environment to play with and to duplicate. So, and it's hard to get room tone when there's like crashing water on rocks and there's like seagulls taking poops and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Seagulls are notoriously loud poopers, by the way. I'm just saying.
Can you imagine if one had pooped on like my stomach in the middle of the
day? Oh, God damn it.
Makeup.
All right, cut.
Yeah. So anyway, that it's like a personal reaction. Mm. It's not anything to do with the scene.
Gotcha.
And I didn't even notice it the first time. I watched it before the holidays rewatched it now. Well, I sort of rewatched it while a lot of handymen were in the house today and blah, blah, blah.
That's the whole thing.
But I didn't catch the first time that number six had talked about the projection of the Cylons.
There's a lot of like unveiling of Cylon mystery in this episode.
Yes, there is.
Which I forgot. I just forgot that we got this much of it. What, and it's not this soon.
I mean,
it's the beginning of season three.
But the first time you're really seeing the Cylon culture aside from on Caprica.
Right. You know, so we're in a Cylon ship and we're getting these explanations. And for the first half of it, I'm like, why are we getting so much of this? And then it becomes clear why. You know, it's Baltar trying to figure out for himself, why do I still see head six? Why do I still have these hallucinations? Well, turns out Cylons do this sort of thing. We have projections. We can look around us and pretend that it's any place we'd like to be. So I'm not on a ship. I'm in a forest.
Right. That's about the middle of the episode, right? Where right. Caprica tells him, well, you're walking through. Because he's like, this is, are we going in a circle? Yeah. Everything looks the same, which was sort of most of the actors on the actual set. But she goes, no, well, I'm walking through a forest.
Right.
And so it's the first, and that's when we make him question, he questions.
Yeah, like this is an episode that's sort of questioning whether or not he is actually a Cylon. Like he's trying to get to the bottom of it. And it starts in that opening sequence when he's like, what are you? You're either connected to the woman I knew on Caprica or you're a damaged part of my subconscious struggling for self-expression. And, you know, Six is like, I'm an angel of God.
I'm an angel of God sent here to help you. Just as I always have been.
Foreshadowing much, sure. And so, you know, that's beginning his sort of investigation into, am I doing things that Cylons do? And then the later question will be, I've only ever seen 7 models. Like, what happened to the other ones? And am I one of them?
Mm-hmm.
I think is the question he comes to by the end. And the Cylons question is, we want to go to Earth. Like, we've heard tell, it's awesome. We'd like to be there too. And Baltar in his standard like self-preservation mode is like, I know how to get there. I swear I've done all the work. I did the plotting and the astrographs and I have maps and whatever.
Well, at first he says he doesn't know. When Deanna and Six ask him if he knows how to get to Earth, he says no. And then when they are about to walk away and he knows his life is on the line.
Yeah.
He goes, yeah, no, I spent hours, days, weeks, months.
Months and months.
Like, it's just, like, I was trying to remember if that was an ad lib or if it was like.
Yeah.
Yeah, he realizes this is self-preservation, which there's a great Gata line.
It's awesome.
Later coming up. But, that completely substantiates that comment.
Mm-hmm. And so we then cut to a flight exercise. It's a training exercise. I guess Adama's trying to whip his Vipers back into shape. And
which they need it. Clearly.
Which they need it because, you know, there's been one instance of action in the last year and a half. And that was the rescue of, that's Exodus Part 2, the rescue on New Caprica. But now you still have 2 Battlestars worth of people who have to figure out how to work together. And some of them
are a little hot under the collar.
A little hot under the collar. And some of them don't seem to care about much at all. Apollo has apparently squeezed himself back into a cockpit. Just wedged himself up there.
With, I don't know if it was with the help of Tomo. Or sorry, not Tomo. Hilo. Yeah,
Hilo.
Or just Hilo just happened to be there when he weighed, yeah, he weighed in.
Emotional support.
Yeah.
I mean, Fat Lee has turned into Skinny Lee.
Very quickly.
I mean,
if anybody's ever tried to lose weight, it doesn't happen that quickly.
No, because I mean, granted, we have no idea the amount of time that went between collaborators and Torn, but it wasn't 8 months.
No,
which is what it might take to drop what seemed to have needed to be like 50 pounds,
mm-hmm.
if not more, to get back into look how many abs I have. I can count them. I don't have just one ab.
And my face now moves again.
Yeah, totally. Look at your jowls jowling. Yeah, like way to go, Skinny Lee. But Kara is not invested whatsoever in what she's doing. Like she's not following orders. She's risking lives. She runs out of fuel and like lands her Viper like miraculously by instinct.
Which we've seen her before, but there's a difference this time.
Yeah.
There's not the security of the, before it was always just her own safety at the.
Right. You know, she was reckless, but not because she wasn't tethered to anything. She feels adrift.
Yeah.
And her adriftness has resulted in her being just wanton and dangerous.
As does Ty.
Ty is drinking like a champ. And clearly has not gotten over the fact that he is responsible for the death of his wife.
Murdering his wife.
Yes.
Yes.
He circled his wife.
circled his wife.
Because that was the name of their little band of vigilantes, right? They were the circle.
Yes.
Yeah.
You got me there.
I got you there. I almost got me there. I'm like, did I get that right? Did I screw that up? Sure.
Yeah.
And so he's like chasing down the corridor after a woman he thinks looks like Ellen. Like he's looking for a blonde and Starbuck is desperately trying to avoid a blonde.
A little one.
The little tiniest one.
Casey. And it's heartbreaking this scene when Katie picks, Starbuck picks the child up and mm-hmm. I mean, she's right in one way. She's like, I don't need a 2-year-old friend or 3-year-old friend or whatever
totally.
It is.
Totally.
And Casey sure as hell does not need me in her life, so do us both a favor and do not bring her around here again, okay?
I'm a Viper pilot. We're in war. Like, I don't need this. But she doesn't say that. She, it's just such a, it's, if you've ever been at that place, I can't say I've ever been at that place because I've never been at war to that extent and like to any extent. but we've all had our ups and downs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know when you're in that state, when you're just like, you don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Right? But when there's a child involved, it always just draws.
I know. It's like find a way to be decent. You know, I know that you don't want that kid in your life because you have these weird feelings about the fact that she was, she's the remainder. She's the vestigial limb of that, you know, 180 days of torture. And like, you just don't want to revisit it. You don't want to look at it. You don't want to be reminded of it. You just kind of want to live in your weird bubble netherworld where you're not emotionally invested in anything.
But you want to tell the mother in a nicer way. Yeah. The mother, you're not even telling her anything. You're not saying, look, I was held by the Cylons. She was made to think she was my daughter. Like, she doesn't want to get into all that because it's too painful to actually even talk. She'd have to then explain about the farm, all this, her eggs being taken, everything. But that's where Starbucks not so good is with
people,
subtlety. You know, she definitely could have handled Casey's mom better and the situation. And we all can in situations, right? Where it's like if you just take a step back and go,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, it seems like
this is why.
Yeah, it seems like Starbucks' default method of dealing with anything is to push forward. You know, and like if, and some of that's a pilot, like, all right, I'm going to just, there's fire in front of me and I'm going to drive through it. I'm not going to stand and kind of navigate around it. I'm going to just push through it, get through it and keep moving like a shark. And the longer she stays sort of dormant and sedentary, the more all of those things that she's kind of pushed forward from have a tendency to gravitate back towards her.
Mm-hmm.
She never wants to look backwards. She never wants to examine her pain and her trauma and anything. And it's.
Do we all? Do any of us?
Do any of us. But I mean. As we will all learn the hardest way, like if we don't process.
You realize we're both grasping our mics right now.
Like veins are sticking out.
We need to look backwards.
We need to process our pain. Otherwise, fuck. God damn
when
it.
When I was 12.
Mary Ellen Moffat, she broke my heart.
I just noticed. Anyway.
Whatever.
This isn't. Visual. It's just audio.
I know. It's a radio play, but FYI, those things were happening in the room.
Those things were happening.
Yeah, and so anyway, Starbuck will learn her lesson, and then we get that awesome Gata, Adama, and Rosalind scene. I think it's the one scene Rosalind has in this episode.
She's light week, in this episode.
Week for Mary, where it's they're still trying to find her. They don't know where the hell they're going. And Gata says, well, you know, Baltar absolutely spent, you know, a ton of time trying to track this down.
A lion's head, a nebulous, a blinking eye.
Yeah, it's a lot of like astrobabble, but
with Adama looking at Rosin like, okay, your scrolls, your whatever.
Right.
Yeah, because it's in the scrolls, right?
The prophecies, yeah.
If there was one thing I learned about Baltar, it was his extraordinary capacity for self-preservation. I think he wanted to find Earth because... he wanted to get there.
And so the upshot of that massive scene of a lot of stuff that we don't understand is that the path to Earth leads through a nebula, a lion's head nebula with a blinking red eye and a blinking blue eye. And that's where everybody seems to be wanting to go.
Yes. And then we see Baltar essentially telling the Cylons the same thing.
Right.
So now we know everybody's on a crash course to this same nebula.
Correct.
We're not going to get there right away, mind you.
No. And then Caprica reveals the, you know, Cylons have the ability to see their environment in whatever form they wish. It's called projection. Instead of staring at blank walls, I choose to surround myself with God's creation. And that's what begins to prompt his feeling that maybe I do this. Does that mean that I am also potentially a Cylon.
Yeah, I mean, he sees the same thing with number six.
Mm-hmm.
So why would you not? I mean, it's actually a realistic question.
Totally. He's, you know, he's a little off his rocker, but he's not a moron.
Caprica's reaction to him saying, am I a Cylon, though, is pretty, you kind of know then and there.
Right.
That
she's a little pissed off at this. Like, what?
Excuse me? No.
You?
No, you are not. No, but then we go back to the beach.
We go back to the beach.
It is beautifully shot.
It really is.
I had a flatter stomach.
Nah.
God damn it.
God, son of a bitch.
Anyway, yeah. No, but it is beautifully shot.
I think this was the scene where I was like, Trisha's got amazing posture. Like, look at this ramrod straight back.
That I have to thank being good in a school, a very small school, digression.
Mm-hmm.
I went to an extremely small rural school where from kindergarten to grade 9, there was under 100 students.
Whoa.
I had the largest class, which was 12 students. But we were very sports forward.
Hmm.
And the principal was the girls' coach. And so my height, I was this tall at like a minuscule age and very, 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 very thin. So I could have been hunched over being very like embarrassed that I was so tall. Mm. But because I could spike and, you know, be the center in basketball and everything, I never had that.
Mm.
Like I've got a high, I never shrank. And so you saying that I have good posture, at least in these scenes, maybe accentuated because I'm playing a robot, but it was due to sports.
You were raised
as a youngin,
as a young person. We will take the occasion of this digression to take a quick break and hear words from our sponsors. We will be right back.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
We're back from my hunching over story.
Yes. The youth in Alberta with Ms. Trisha Helfer.
With mild scoliosis and being told to stand up straight.
We are back on Galactica in the sort of pilot's lounge where everybody's trying to figure out what they should now name the call sign for Sharon Agathon.
She makes it clear she's not Boomer.
I'm not Boomer. Don't call me Boomer. Boomer shot the old man. I didn't shoot the old man. Everybody's shouting out names, and most of them are like Chrome Dome, Bullet Head, blah blah blah. And then Hot Dog is like, "How about Athena?" Because Hot Dog is like, "Look at how smart I am.
Mm-hmm.
I know all about Greek mythology. Yo, I paid attention that junior year in high school English class."
And I'm actually secretly the Admiral's son in real life.
Yeah, so I know some stuff. Which is a nice little moment of, you know, it seems everybody kind of embraces her except for Ty.
Yes, this whole aspect of trust. And it's like, it's interesting because the pilots, everybody in there has started trusting Sharon, now Athena.
Yes.
But this whole, this sequence of trust that goes throughout the rest of the episode is, I was about to say damaging to watch. It's not damaging. It's so heavy because it filters into anybody's life, be it a relationship, be it anything, right? And it's interesting to see all these other, the pilots and everything accepting her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like they're totally fine with her because most of those people had been on Galactica for the 180 days of the New Caprican occupation. But Ty...
While you were pinning wings on your Cylon girlfriend, our people were strapping homemade bombs to their chests, doing whatever they could to take the bastards out. forgive me if I don't get all misty over your sacrifices.
You know, it turns into this like weird misery comparison seminar where they're like, it was bad for us up on Galactica. You thought it was bad. We were living in jail cells. We didn't know where meals were.
How many pilots? How many people died trying to save your ass? Like it's this. You're right. It's the meal comparison. It's awful.
Yeah. It's like, you know, whose atrocity is worse? And Ty is doing the exact opposite of what a ranking flag officer should be doing in the scenario, which is fomenting dissent. He's actively sowing discord among
actively
among, like, and it's already discorded. They're already, you know, personality conflicts and what have you. And the job should be finding ways to stitch these people together, where Ty and to a lesser degree Kara are actively working to keep them apart.
Now, he's drinking again heavily.
Yes.
Do you think it's more the alcohol or the Ellen situation or a combination of both? I mean, I suppose a combination of both, but if you had to choose one or the other, which would you choose?
I think it's his guilt over Ellen that's driving, it's the depth of his own sacrifice and what he had to do for what he felt was right. That's sort of driving the drinking, it's driving the inability to see anybody else who hadn't been on New Caprica with him as less than, you know, and Hilo will say that when he goes and talks to the Admiral. It's like, he feels like if you didn't like fight in the muck, if you weren't on the surface during the war, then you're not, you can't be trusted.
Yeah, Adama says at that point, they know better. About the, you know, they're sowing discord among the morale and whatever. And he goes, they know better, mm-hmm. meaning Starbuck and Ty. And Hilo goes, they don't care.
Yeah.
Like they're at that point that they do not care that they are sowing discord. They're instigating it. I think they're actually in a way wanting it, because if everybody's in discord, it makes their own internal discord seem more normal.
Right. Like everybody needs to suffer because I suffered.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, everybody's suffering anyway.
Yeah, it's like, guys, but mission accomplished. Just ease off the throttle. We're already not having a great time up here.
We're already on a fracking spaceship.
Yeah.
For how many months now? How many years? What is it? What is it at this point? 2.5 years? 2 years?
Something like that.
Something.
I don't recall. I mean, it's at least a year and a half. No, half a year. On New Caprica.
On New Caprica.
But probably another year.
So year and a half, something like that. Total. Since the, we could be completely wrong on
that. Yes, we probably are.
I shouldn't have even asked that question.
All right. The internet will correct us.
I'm just going to take another drink of my wine.
The internet will make sure that we get those right figures. Mm-hmm. Back on the Cylon Baystar, we get our first introduction to the concept of the Final Five.
There are only 12 Cylon models, but in the entire occupation on New Caprica, I only saw 7. Now here again, the same 7. Who are the final 5?
I can't talk about that.
Can't what?
I can't. It's complicated, but we don't talk about them. Ever.
And that is interrupted by an emergency. The base ship that the Cylon sent out to investigate the Lion's Head Nebula has gone off communications. Like they're
by Baltar's instructions. Baltar, so now he's just deeper in the shit.
Deeper in the shit. And some disease has infested the base ship, and no Cylon can set foot on it or risk bringing that back to the population at large. And the only person on that base ship who won't, not subject to being sick, is Gaius Baltar.
Which number 6? Lets him know.
Yes.
Because
the Raiders.
What are they called? Raiders.
Yeah.
Those things. Because the entire Cylon livelihood, whatever, not livelihood, but their walls. You see that, you know, you see that earlier on in the beginning of the episode before Caprica 6 walks in and Deanna's in there with him and Baltar's got his hand on the wall. Mm-hmm. I think that scene is there to reiterate that the whole ship is an organism.
Yeah.
And he says, I can feel it. I can feel it pulsing or moving or whatever he says. Mm. And so the ships can't even jump in.
Yeah.
Because they will become infected. Yeah. It's not just the ship can jump in and then mm-hmm. the people can wear masks.
Right. You know, and we will in short order meet our very first hybrid, which seems to be a Cylon model that that came off the assembly line a little bit wrong.
a little off.
But they are the beating heart and mind and soul of every base ship. They all have one.
Like the brain of the base ship, in a way.
The base ship. It's alive. The entire ship is alive because it's wired into this Cylon, a hybrid.
But brain in a weird way, because it doesn't control, it can be controlled by the other Cylons, but it's also the one that does the actions.
Totally.
It's and like, Leoben believes it, but the others, because it babbles.
Right. Leoben believes that the weird vocalizations might be, you know, the voice of God, and everybody else feels like it's just literally techno babble. None of it makes any sense. None of it seems to string together as a narrative. You know, two protons expelled by each coupling site centers them under force. The embryo becomes a fish that we don't enter until the eight plate. We're here to experience, evolve the little toe, atrophy. Don't ask me how. I'll be dead in 1,000 light years. I didn't memorize all that.
Thank you. Genesis. Yeah. We actually put captions on.
I know. First time in 3 years you put captions on.
FTL system check. I pity and honor that actress at the same time, because that is not, that's just totally babble. There's no. Yeah.
It's like she's doing the job of the 30 people on Galactica who get that ship running. She's doing the job of Gaeta. She's doing the job of Duala. She's doing the job of, you know, whatever captain who is down in engineering, making sure everything works. Like it is, it's funneling all of this information through one person who is somehow keeping everything in line.
But we don't really know. Is she just a head and shoulders?
I don't know. There was some like weird camera move where you get to see some odd armatures and like half formed limbs that maybe didn't come all the way. It's weird.
It's weird.
It's a little weird.
It was weird when we were shooting it. We're like,
Yeah.
And so, that poor woman had to stay in that goo all the time.
Cylons seem to be all about those bathtubs.
Yeah. It's oof. But I do. Like God literally speaks to us through her. That's what Leoben believes.
She experiences life very differently than we do, guys. She swims in the heavens, laughs at stars, breathes in cosmic dust. Maybe Leoben's right. Maybe she does see God.
Is it taking a step back and seeing the bigger picture? Is it what? Like, what is it? But there's something.
I find it interesting that this is a show that plays very heavily in Greek mythology, right? Like it's all about the astrological signs, you know, Athena, Hera, Apollo, all those names. And the Cylons believe in the one God. They don't believe in that stuff. But the hybrids are like oracles in a weird way. Mm-hmm. Like the oracles of good, like the Oracle at Delphi, the Oracle at wherever, who would speak in prophecy and speak in words that you couldn't understand and string together. And you had to somehow discern what the oracles were telling you. And they were always like, you know, predominantly young women who were like predominantly drugged to feel and have access to what seemed to be the beyond. And it's like, oh, so the people who believe in the one God also have oracles. Mm-hmm. But the people who believe in the plurality of gods don't have anything like that.
That's interesting.
I didn't recognize that until just this very minute. Really? Look what we did, you guys. We totally got somewhere. So Baltar has agreed.
Okay, I got to interrupt for a second then. Then why is it, it's like when she jumps, it's like she's having an orgasm.
I don't know that part.
Okay.
Something tells me that there's somebody on that Battlestar staff who's a bit of a freak. How do you travel through time? How do we do anything awesome? Orgasm, guys.
Jump!
Look. Oh, shit. We better leave. Do you need a cigarette hybrid? We can't see your hands.
We can't see your hands. Hands there's up, multiple lady. Tentacles down there. It could be a multiple thing going on.
It's a whole thing. Like, no wonder she sees God all the time.
We just came up with something.
Yes, we did. We solved Battlestar, you guys. We did it.
And now we are on the...
The ship of death.
The ship of death.
Yeah, because Baltar has agreed to this mission where, because he, the lone human among the Cylon, can visit this ship that seems to be infected by a disease.
And smartly on his part, he goes, we had a raider. You guys have to.
Yeah,
have
like you got to have, like, some, stuff.
Have some colonial ships.
Come on. And so he's investigating. He sees a bunch of Cylons, literally like as if they have, you know, Ebola or something, just dying along the decks. And he finds what seems to be this this beacon or
something.
Something. Yeah. Now, is that a Gina model down there? Or
that was another six.
Another six, but a brunette six.
Yeah, I had a wig on.
Mm.
I at that point, I wanted to have more different hair colors and shit. So fair. I was like, can I just have a...
Give me a brunette wig. Come on, Gabby.
Give me a wig.
Come on.
Let's make her be another one. She's the only one that looks different. So let's make her have different hair.
I kept on wondering, like, is she Shelley Godfrey? Is she who had been then resurrected and now she's back here? Is she Gina who had died? And
no, she was just another six.
Just another six. Just happened to like it on the dark side.
I happened to like it dark side.
Dark side six.
And James actually had a lot of trouble in this. Like he just did not want to kill the six.
Mm, yeah.
Spoiler. He's going to kill her in about 2 seconds.
Yeah. Just stay tuned.
Well, about 2 minutes. But I just wanted to play with it because I thought if you have Gina and you have, because my hair all fell out, we had to do a different look, right? Mm. So you've got Gina and then there's a Lyra that comes in, I think, in the fourth season.
Ooh, that's right.
That has a different hair as well, because I was like, well, let's make another one.
While we're doing it, let's go.
let's just do different hair. but yeah, so she turns out to be not his biggest fan.
No, because it seems as if she has put together some faulty logic, but it from a certain perspective seems like it makes sense, which is you sent us here. And this thing we found in space must have been left by the 13th tribe. And it's a human device that's filled with a pestilence that only kills Cylons. You sent us here. You were trying to destroy us all.
Yeah, because she was aware that Baltar was on the ship. That was the ship that was sent out there to his coordinates, right?
Totally. And he's like, I would never do anything to hurt you. And it's like, no, you wanted the other base ships to come. You want us to all die. You did this, Baltar. And he realizes, like, his first instinct when he first meets her is, drink this water. We'll take you back to the other Cylon. We'll get you better. Well, let me take some blood, figure out what happened.
Yeah, he wants to help her. And then
now she's
his self-preservation
kicks right in.
His capacity for self-preservation kicks in.
And he's like, well, it seems I have to kill you in order to save myself because you can't tell anybody your theory or they'll kill me.
Even though most everybody on the ship is about a breath away from death anyway. But
totally. But, you know, he gets the radio back from the other base ship.
I'm returning to the base ship.
What do you see?
I've seen nothing. Nothing of consequence. There's nothing left to do here.
Now, why did he not say? It wasn't him that is, again, it's self-preservation because he sent them to the coordinates?
I think so. I think he knows that none of them will go on this ship. Or...
But it's a super old... Sorry, continue.
I was going to say there's also the version of there might be more of these beacons out there and he might want them to stumble into more of them.
Ooh, I never thought of that.
It might be like, hey, nothing bad here. You should come. Totally come. Whatever it is, it's unique to this ship. There are not like depth charges of disease floating in space around the nebula.
That's a good idea. I never thought about that.
Yeah. Maybe he's trying to be a little bit altruistic.
Which he is at times.
He is at times. Altruism cloaked, coated, sugar-coated in self-preservation.
Yes. The ultimate dichotomy.
The ultimate dichotomy. Meanwhile, all of these the seven models are all having a giant fight over what they should do now. Do we leave? Do we save them? It's Baltar's fault. You did this, you son of a bitch! And he's like, not me. I didn't do that. I was a good boy. I did boy things.
Which these scenes remind me always. Like, I think that's why I hated doing these scenes. Mm. And I think I mentioned last episode when we first got onto the base ship, we were all kind of weirded out from doing something that's so steeped in realism and what I mean, yes, you're in a spaceship, but whatever. But Now you're all standing around a circle with your hand in a thing of water. And it just seemed so procedural in the way that everybody had a line.
Right.
And everybody comes up with the, you know, it's like Criminal Minds, mm-hmm. which I've done. I'm not against.
No, but, casting no aspersions.
Where everybody is standing in a circle and it's mostly done for camera time and filming time. Mm-hmm. But everybody seems to have be in the collective thought and right. finishing each other's sentences. That's what I found these scenes around this think board, whatever that thing was, that of water that we had.
Right. Like fights are uglier and messier than this mm-hmm. and would take longer to get to some resolution. Well, unless everybody has the perfect line that they need to say to get it across. And then Deanna sticks her hand in the data stream and decides, we're jumping. We're
and that's when going. We find out that the hybrid doesn't have a say.
Right. You know, she is very much like the deck crew. And these seven models are the commanders of the ship. And it seems as if Deanna has a little bit of a leg up over the other ones where she's... She can step in and make things happen in ways that the others can't.
I don't know if she can, because Cavill kind of seems to be the boss in some ways. I think just in its per instance.
Okay.
That's what I kind of took it as.
Meanwhile, Gaius isn't lying about never having seen anything aboard the ship, but Cabrica's like, yo, buddy. I got my hand in your brain, and I see what you saw.
I got my hand in the water. I'm zooming in. I'm doing like we do on an iPhone.
Yep, zooming enhanced.
Which was before iPhones, mind you. Mm-hmm. So we shot this before iPhones.
Yes.
We were zooming in.
Steve Jobs owes you money. Give us all money.
Give us money. Yeah, and... But I don't know why she decides not to say anything. She wants to question him first.
Yeah. I think she knows him better than anybody and knows that maybe there's something else going on here beyond him just lying to save his ass. Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. But probably not.
But she's going to figure it out first. Mm-hmm. She owes him that.
Right.
For her own heart.
Mm-hmm. And now Adama is trying to excise the cancer that has infected his crew. And he comes down to the pilot's lounge. He asks for Kara's sidearm. And basically it's, you two are killing me by ruining this crew, by poisoning this crew. You know, this is my life. This is my family. And if you two are going to do this to me, just shoot me. Like, be ballsy enough to shoot me in the face instead of stabbing me in the back. And Ty doesn't seem to, you know, buckle under this, but it's affecting Kara, and you can kind of tell.
Yeah. And when he throws her to the ground.
Yeah, kicks the chair out from under
her. I love it.
Yes, you were a daughter to me, but now you're nothing. Get out of my sight. Get off of my ship.
Yeah, he says something about...
like a daughter to me once, no more.
You can find another way to be a human being in your earth.
You're a malcontent and a cancer.
I don't have my
and
glasses yet.
And I won't
yet.
Have you on my sheet. Your night glasses haven't showed up yet. So you have a choice. You can figure out how to become a human being again and an officer.
Or you can find another place
to live
off of this ship.
You're dismissed. I'm mad, Daddy's mad. And then she stomps off. And then he wheels on Ty. You gonna kick me out of my chair too? No.
No, but we're gonna have a serious conversation here.
Basically, it's go to your room and don't come out until you're ready to play nicely with others.
And be the man that I know, or the
that
officer.
I served with for 30 years. And it's like, well, I don't know how to tell you this, Bill, but that man is dead.
That man's gone.
Yeah.
And it's so... hard to watch this because you know, like,
it's necessary, and it's the weird thing of you don't want these two characters to be this way, but you also want Bill to stand up and read them the riot act and come down hard on them and do what he has to do,
because they're acting like petulant little children. I'm sorry to say. I mean, I know the stakes are so extremely high that to say petulant little children is so demeaning. I don't mean it that way. Mm-hmm. But everybody has gone through so much and everybody else is trying to find a way to...
Totally. Like, you guys aren't the only ones who lost things down there, but you seem to be the only two unwilling to let it go.
Yeah.
To the point where Kara still has her long hair, to the point where he is still wearing a bandage on his eye. You know, like, you could have put an eye patch on, buddy. Mm-hmm. You could have found a way to not have it be so obvious that you gave up an eye for the cause. And he's like, I'm not that man anymore, Bill. But Kara walks into the why can't I think of the locker room? We'll call it a locker room. It's not that. But
the head.
The head. You know, pulls out a knife.
I know the head is. Sorry.
It is the head, though.
It's called the head. It's, yes.
Yeah. It's we're not in any way being saucy. It is called the head.
It's called the head. And she chops all her hair off to where you can see her actual hair actually is without the extensions.
Yeah.
You see it specifically when she walks out of the room mm-hmm. after in the last scene. But yeah, she takes it to heart immediately. Ty doesn't.
Right. Yeah.
Because Ty just goes to drink more.
Yeah. Because she, you know, Bill knew exactly what to say to her to get her back on track, which is, you used to be my daughter and no more. You're dead to me unless you can figure out how to push past this. Look, I don't want you to be dead to me. I want you to be my dad again.
Yeah.
And so she cuts her hair off and goes to visit Casey and, like, you know, tries to find a way to make some amends and does the things that she was unwilling to do before, which is face the trauma head on and the memories of that trauma and the vestigial reminders of all that trauma, and try to deal with it and realize that it's not that little girl's fault. It's not the little girl's fault.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I didn't mention this at the beginning. Mm. Casey fucking speaks in this episode.
A lot.
She doesn't speak the entire time before, but now all of a sudden knows words.
Yeah. You know, like she couldn't have called her Kara before. And like, hey, you're not my mommy. I have a mommy. They took me from her. It's fucked up, but let's hang out a bit, because what else?
Now, do you think they should have just had her been mute the whole time?
It would have been more consistent.
I think so. Because you don't see her again, I don't think.
I don't think you ever see her again.
But like, rewatched, you know, further yet, because I'd like to do it right before we tape. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, and it's like, you could pretend that kid just doesn't have words yet.
Yeah.
Like, that kid is.
Because she's young enough. Some kids don't speak till.
Yeah. Like, that kid could be like older. 2 years old, still walking, still like affectionate and whatever, but just, I don't have words yet. But instead, now she's all like, have you read Descartes? I'm a big fan of philosophy, Kara. I know you seem like you're staring into the abyss. The abyss will stare back at you. It's like, what? Where was this shit before?
Your dad was a piano player. You paint.
This is bullshit.
I can see. Mm. I can see into the future, Kara.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, Racetrack and Athena have found the Lion's Head Nebula and also a dead base star.
And it looks like a lion's head.
It does. They weren't fucking around.
And a dead base star. And you think here, this is the whole trust thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Athena looks like she's about to go fracking AWOL, a little wiggy.
And then she just starts quoting scripture instead.
And Ian, I couldn't understand exactly what she said there. Could you?
When God's anger awakens, even the mighty shall fall.
Fuck, Athena, we need to get out of here.
I understood even the mighty shall fall, but I couldn't understand the first line of dialogue.
Yeah. And it's, I guess, like, yeah, God is back and he's killing Cylons.
But it was really a human beacon that was a really, 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 really old beacon from the 13th colony.
Right.
But, or 13th tribe.
These are the Pythian prophecies, the scrolls. All of it is in metaphor. All of it is, as we learned earlier in the episode, according to Laura, they speak in metaphor. We can't be literal about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so if this is also a line from the prophecy, which I think Sharon had explained that she knew, like, by heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's another, like, it's from the prophecies. So it was written. So it shall be done.
I just kept thinking, I don't trust her. Is she going to do something?
You have to trust her.
I know. I have. No spoilers.
No spoilers.
But at the same time, like, the whole episode is about trust and learning to trust again and all that. And it's like, how do you really with a Cylon that looks exactly like somebody that shot Tama? And
oh no, it's crazy, right?
Maybe they be better people than I am, but
yes, forgive, forget.
One of the hardest things in the world to do.
Indeed. Do you have a frackdown for this episode? Uh-oh.
I think my frack down, it was between two, but I was going to go selfish and be a bad frack down about like...
Your ADR.
My ADR. And instead, I'm not going to make that. I really... Adama's coming in to speak to Starbuck and Ty about them, you know, the morale and getting out of their own personal headspace in such a time, like seeing outside of your own little box, which is very hard for all of us to do, but they are senior officers. Yeah. And not saying they're not human and that they shouldn't be able to have their own little box to be put in, but to see the bigger picture at this point in the war that they're in, I felt that was a really powerful moment for me. So that's the frack down is in that mess hall or whatever it is.
Yeah, that's a really great moment. You might have stole the one that I was going to do. So instead, I'm going to do one negative frack down and one like quizzical one, which is I noticed for the first time while you're on the Cylon base ship and Baltar's walking around the light pattern. It always seems to be like four lights in a row, like stacked on top of each other, and then two lights at the bottom of each one. And I'm like, it looks like a penis.
Oh, are you serious? I'm gonna have to. Oh my god, I gotta like, go back and rewatch.
Light. Like, why are there phallic symbols all over the Cylon spaceship? I don't understand. And then like Baltar's like hand against the wall, like pawing at it. Like, why is he like? I don't. Okay.
Oh my god, I'm gonna immediately go back after this and watch. Look at that.
And my other one is the this seems to be a show that more often than not, deals fairly with things like trauma and things like we have a storyline, you know, where an event will happen and the after effects of that event will sort of trail, if not for episodes, sometimes for seasons, like the after effects of things like that. But the speed with which we dispense with Fat Lee, you know, in a way that doesn't really feel earned, you know, like it, sure, you can absolutely put on 50 pounds in 6 months. You cannot take off 50 pounds in 3 weeks.
No. Nor beating up Callie.
Yeah, totally.
In a smaller form of it, right? Because, again, the bruises heal faster.
Right.
But and they weren't instrumental in this episode, but it just made me think of that.
Yeah.
Because I noticed it when I saw them just discussing at the beginning of Starbuck coming in with that, you know, on no fuel and whatever.
Right. Like, and I understand that, like, yes, we don't want Jamie to be in a fat suit for the entire season.
Not only for money-wise, prosthetic-wise, everything, and also just...
Yeah, just time-wise, production-wise.
It's not storyline-wise. Okay, he's going to lose weight, so let's just make him lose weight. But it seemed too fast.
It seems too fast, especially because it came from dealing with that trauma, like the emotional trauma of not having a mission, not having a purpose, you know, leaving everybody behind, resulted in him eating like a pig. And so now that trauma seems to not have registered on him, in him, in a way where you're like, you know, don't let me ever get like that again, Hilo. Ha ha.
Yeah, that's how it was handled. That's instead of like, you know, and being so, a little harder to get.
Totally. So maybe it's either don't do that unless you're going to live with it. Like, let's find a different way to show Lee's trauma that doesn't require a fat suit, because we can't actually live with it the way you have to live with trauma on this show. So it was a shortcut to get back to status quo so quick. And it can't have been a lot of time, honestly.
No, it can't have been, because they're all still dealing with, like,
totally.
Yeah.
It's, like, we don't know how to fly.
It seems way too fast. Yeah. I mean, I would guess this is almost like 2 weeks, three weeks.
Even if it's a month.
Yeah.
Even if it's a month and this has been going on for a long time.
You can't lose 50 pounds in a month.
You can't lose 50 pounds in a month. You can't get fucking abs in a month. You can't get abs in a year.
And they showed them off in the toward the end again.
Look at me. Yeah. Hey, gang. We're back. Yeah. Towels.
Which we all love Jamie's abs, but Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. It was too fast.
So that was my down frack down.
Down frack down. We're allowed to have down frack down.
Every now and again we can. Mm-hmm. That is this episode of the Battlestar Galactic cast.
We have a Measure of Salvation coming up.
Measure of Salvation. We'll be back in a week to talk Measure of Salvation.
With a guest.
Ooh.
We've been guestless for a few episodes.
I know. It's just been us. It's just been us girls. But now we got
girls and boys.
Girls and boys.
Because I got some testosterone in me.
And I got some other ones. I am mostly estrogen. But yes, we will be back next week with a Measure of Salvation. But for now, we'd like to thank the good boys and girls at Sci-Fi Wire for continuing to indulge us. Thank Brett Boehm for being our audio whiz on the ones and twos. And as always, thank Trisha Helfer for being awesome.
Aw, thank you, Mark. You too. And thank you for the cats for being quiet tonight.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I think I heard like a vase shatter upstairs, but you know.
No, I fed them right before they came, before you guys all came over. They're just passed out.
Nice. Yeah. It's like a bunch of uncles at a barbecue. Just everybody's just eating too much. We're just
look
sit
at
here
Caesar for- right there. He's sleeping with his eyes open. Do you see it?
Wow.
He's literally passed out with his eyes open.
That is a happy cat. But yes, we will see you next week, everybody. Thanks for riding with us.
Au revoir.
Au revoir, mes amis.